I want to speak about a few related topics that have to do with women. And even though to people with not too much background, it's difficult to give over what I'm going to tell you, but you can adapt it to the situation that you'll be in. Start with a kliyoker in the beginning of this week's Sedra. He comments, Shlach lecho anoshim. Lecho always means for your benefit. So it comes out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, send men for your benefit. Because the men are going to come back with a bad report and be stuck in the desert for 40 years. And that way, even though you're not allowed to go into Eretz Israel, your life will be extended for another 40 years. But if you sent women, they probably would have done the shlichus properly and they would have gone in there to Eretz Israel immediately, and 40 years would cut off your life. So it's to your benefit to send men and not to send women. And we see that Taka women throughout history, in Mitzrayim, they were the ones in whose schus Klal Yisrael went out. In the Midbar, they didn't sin, not by the Chet HaEgel, not by the Chet HaMeraglim. A lot of widows went into Eretz Israel, whose husbands died in the Midbar. And Chazal say that women have a tremendous power in Klal Yisrael. That the women were offered the Torah first, according to the Marashah, only. And they were supposed to go and convince the men. Moshe Rabbeinu had to convince the women, and the women convinced the men. And the Medrash says three reasons why, and in our discussion we'll understand what those three reasons are. First reason is shemizdarzos b'mitzvos yosem min ha'ish. The reason the women were approached first or only by Matan Torah is because they have more enthusiasm when they do mitzvahs more than men. Secondly, molichos es b'neim u'baleim l'Torah. They lead their husbands and children to Torah. And thirdly, the Rabban Hashem said, when I created the world, I gave the first mitzvah to the man and the woman ruined everything. This time I'll start off with her, and maybe she won't ruin everything this time. So we'll see that the reasons are not two nice ones and one not so nice one, but they're all the same idea, same basic underlying theme. I'm going to start with something that you're probably familiar with, both of these Mamori Chazal, and I'm going to explain them in a way that's perhaps not the nor usual, but I think that it's MS and it's definitely a possible way of explaining these. On the one hand, Chazal say, Noshim Daitin Kalos Aleihin, which translated loosely means that women are light-minded, simple-minded, Noshim Daitin Kalos Aleihin, which can't be the meaning because this was said about Sora Imenu, who definitely was not simple-minded or light-minded. She was a Neviya of a higher level than Avraham Avinu, and to be a Navi, you have to be a Chacham. But that's what it says, Noshim Daitin Kalos Aleihim. On the other hand, Chazal say, Bina Yisera Nitna Be'isha Yosem Yibo'ish. Extra understanding was given to a woman even more than a man. So, which is it? A woman has more understanding or she's simple-minded? And the truth is, if you take both of these mamorim together, they're not insulting to women, they're very insulting to men. Think about it. It says women are simple-minded, but they're smarter than men. Where does that leave men? So in any case, it doesn't mean either of them don't mean what they seem to say. What they mean, if you look at the exact wording, means the following. First of all, let's see that Dina Yisera Nitna Be'ish Yosem Yibo'ish has an extra word in it. If it just meant to say that women have greater Bina than men, it should have said Dina Yisera Nitna Be'isha Mibo'ish. Or, Bina Nitna Be'isha Yosem Miha'ish. What's Bina Yisera Nitna Be'isha Yosem Miha'ish? There's an extra Yosem there. Basically, and to be able to fit all of this into the time that we have, we're going to have to do it in a streamlined way. The basic idea is that there is a very big difference between Bina and Das. There are two distinct regimens of types of knowledge. And every human being has both of them. Women were given an extra measure of one of them over the other. And then it's pretty much balanced. Das is a very analytical function. It's the analysis of information to arrive at what is factual and what is not. And basically it's building a database. That's what Das is. Das is what normally is referred to as Chochmah. It is the knowledge of facts and the analysis of information to arrive at what's factual and what's not. Very analytical kind of process. Bina, on the other hand, starts where Das ends. Once you have the information and you know what's true and what's not true, how do you apply it? What do you do with it? What are its implications? Bina comes from Bona. Right, to build, v'havin dover mitoch dover, to understand something from within something else. What are the implications? How do you apply it? How do you live it? That's Das. Das is a very intuitive, intimate understanding of the facts in order to know how to apply them. A woman was given an extra measure of Bina, even more than men. What's the first one? The first one means that vis-a-vis her das, her ability to amass knowledge and analyze information, her ability to be intuitive of how to apply that information is always stronger. She has a stronger potential towards Bina than das. Now, it doesn't mean she's going to be extra special in Bina. She has to exercise that potential. Right? And it doesn't mean that a man's going to have a lot of das. He has to exercise it. It's a potential. But potentially, women were given a greater potential for Bina than for das. That doesn't limit her potential for das. She could be a genius in das and a genius plus in Bina. But potentially, she's imbalanced. She has more of a predisposition to Bina than to das. If that's the case, then the other mimer is exactly the converse of the first one. You have a scale. You know, a scale where you weigh things one opposite the other. And you put on one side of the scale a ton of steel. And the other side of the scale a ton of steel with a feather. So the ton of steel is lighter than the ton of steel with a feather, by one feather. And the ton of steel with a feather is heavier than the other side. That doesn't mean that a ton of steel is light. It's heavy. But relative to the other side, it's lighter. Noshim daiten kalos alehen. Women's das is lighter vis-a-vis their other function of Bina. Because Bina yisera nitna be'isha yosem re'isha. Because a woman was given an extra measure of Bina vis-a-vis herself and vis-a-vis men. So, the function of Bina is to be able to create the misgeret, the framework, within which the Torah can be applied and lived. And that is perhaps more important than knowing the information. One illustration of that is Esav. The Medrash says that when they went to bury Yaakov Avinu, Esav protested. And he made a big stink, and he wouldn't let them bury Yaakov. He said it was his rights to be buried in Moreh Machpelah. And the brother said there was a shtar, that he sold his rights to Yaakov. And Esav said, produce the shtar. They said, we left it back in Mitzrayim. They sent Naphtali back to get the shtar. Meanwhile, Hushim ben Don, who was a deaf mute, sees that Esav's holding up his grandfather's funeral, and he cuts Esav's head off. And Esav's head falls on Yaakov. Yaakov opens his eyes and smiles. And they bury Esav's head together with Yaakov. So if anybody ever asked you who is buried in Moreh Machpelah, add Esav's head.
There's the part that
says head of Esav?
Oh, well.
I hear. The Bali Musar say, what does that mean? Right. Very nice. Esav's head's buried in Moreh Machpelah. What it means is that from his head, the facts that he had, Esav's head was fit to be buried in Moreh Machpelah. He learned from Yitzchak. He learned the same yeshivas of Yaakov. He had all the right information. The problem is it never filtered down to his body. His body, we don't know where it was buried, if it was buried altogether. The main thing of a person is not necessarily the facts that he knows. but how he uses them. How it becomes the bina that he has to apply those facts in a proper way and to put them into a misgeret. So a woman's role in Torah is more to create the environment in which Torah can be applied, whereas the man's role is to establish what the Torah is. Man is a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and we'll see in 1 second what that applies to, because that's the next thing we're going to discuss. Which parts of Torah, therefore, should a woman emphasize and be involved in? Which parts are sometimes off limits to her? And what the reason for that is? But a woman's role is pretty much the bina role. The role of applying the facts that the man ascertains. Men sit and learn Torah, Torah Shebaal Peh specifically, and they have to be proficient in the methods of logic that are needed to analyze information and come to the conclusion what is factual, what's halacha, what's hashkafa. That's a man's role. The woman takes that halacha and hashkafa and applies it and makes a living framework within which it can be applied. What are the implications? How do you apply all of this? That she uses her bina for. And that's why the woman's role is a bias. We spoke about that last year. That environment called the bias. There's a Gemara that I think reflects this. And if I didn't have a pshat of how to explain this Gemara to you, I wouldn't mention it to you. The Gemara says like this: there was an Isha Chashuva, Isha Gedola, important woman, great woman, who once came to the Beis Medrash of, who was it? I don't remember now. Okay, Abaya Rabba, I think. I don't remember now. Whoever it was. And she had the following question: if all the people who sinned by the golden calf did the same sin, why were there three different death penalties? Some died by the sword of Levim, some died in a magefa that the Rabban Shom brought, and some died when Moshe Rabbeinu pulverized the ego, mixed it with the water, and gave it to them like sotas. Three different deaths, yet the same sin. So the Amora, who she asked, said to her, why don't you go home and knit? Ein chochma le'isha ela bepelech. A woman's wisdom is limited to knitting, to weaving. There's a few questions over here. First of all, it sounds like it was a stupid question. So why don't you go home and do what you can do and don't sit here and tell us your crazy questions. The only problem is the Gemara discusses the question for the next page and comes up with an answer. So it must have been a good question, right? The men sat and discussed it. And also, why did he tell her in such a not nice way, right? When you say, you know, well, it's a nice question, sit here, we'll see if we have an answer, come back tomorrow, whatever, we'll get back to you. Why did he tell her such a, right, a not nice answer? Go home and knit. Women are only fit for knitting and weaving. I'll tell you what I think. First of all, you have to know that Chazal spoke to each other like that. It was a sign of respect. If we would speak to each other like that, it would be a sign of disrespect. But they knew that when they were learning, their only concern was what's truth. They knew that they had to arrive at what the truth was, and if they made a mistake, it could affect all generations. So they had to know that what they were saying, what they were arguing, was true. And therefore it was more important to them to be told what you're saying is idiotic than to be sugar-coated and maybe come to make a mistake. They were beyond their own personal feelings. They had a responsibility for all future generations of bringing out the truth of Torah. And that's all that mattered to them. And therefore, they would have been offended if somebody they were arguing with said something and sugarcoated it in order not to hurt their feelings and assumed that their feelings meant more than the truth. So if you think what I'm saying is idiotic, tell me that. And therefore, we find Chazal, where one says to the other one, if you could say something like that, you don't have a brain in your head. It's an exact quote of a Gemara, right? The answer is that that showed respect for the other person. I know that you don't care about your own feelings. You want to be told like it is. You don't want to sugarcoat it. So when they spoke to this woman like that, they understood that she could take that also. That to her, the emes was more important than her feelings, and they told it to her like it is because there was something extremely important to get across. Now, what was that? Her question was a very theoretical question. It had no lemaisa implications. It was something that happened, right, thousands of years ago. Why these people got different death penalties made absolutely no difference. So the Tana said like this. In learning Torah, there's two levels. There's the level of creating the information and analyzing it and coming to what is factual. That's like making threads. It's like taking wool, something that is nebulous, and spinning it into thread. Now you have the threads, but the threads are unusable. You can't use threads for anything practical. You have to weave them into a framework called a sweater, a yarmulke, or whatever it is that you need. You weave that thread, and now it can be used. The men's job is to create the threads. The woman's job is to knit, to take the threads that the men create and knit them and weave them into a framework. If you're going to sit here and duplicate our role, who's going to do your role? You go home and knit, not knit a sweater. Go home and take the threads that we create in this space medrash and you knit them into a framework that's usable. So you have to do your job, not duplicate our job. There's plenty of people who sit in the space medrash and make threads. But if the women aren't there to make the framework from those threads, to weave them together, then one whole part of Klal Yisrael, which is important, is going to be missing. So your place is not here to ask. You're sitting and debate your question for the next few hours. You go home and knit. You take what we produce here and you make it into a framework where the Torah can be applied. That's what he told him.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I've heard this mashal before with challah also, that the husband goes out in the field and drinks flour and the wife makes it into food. But practically speaking, I don't understand what that really means. Like, what the husband comes home and says, this is what I learned, and our role is to...
No, it's not only what the husband comes home and says what he learned. The husband represents the male contribution to Torah learning. Okay. If you hold for a second, we're going to get to the next part, probably you'll explain it better. Okay, the next thing I want to discuss based on this, next stage up, is another Gemara. The Gemara says, "Kol ha-melamed es bito Torah ki'ilu melamed tiflis." A person who teaches his daughter Torah is like he's teaching her to be immoral. Teaching her immorality. How could Torah be immorality? And if you teach your son Torah, it's not going to be immoral. Men are able to learn Torah properly and women not. What does it mean? So first you have to know which kind of Torah we're talking about. A woman makes Birchas HaTorah partially because she is responsible to learn Torah not as Torah learning, but as mitzvah learning. In other words, she has to perform every mitzvah, so she has to know what to do. She doesn't have to learn for the sake of learning, but she has to learn for the sake of doing. So a woman has to, and for sure can, learn every mitzvah that she has to do. She has to learn the halachas and the stam of the hashkafas of the mitzvah too, because you can't do it halachically if you don't really understand it hashkafically, and the musr. So she has to learn basically most of the Shulchan Aruch. She has to learn all the musr sfarim and hashkafas sfarim, because that's also mitzvahs. Emunah, bitachon, and so on. Chumash and Nach, she can learn. That's not what this includes. It includes Torah Shebal Peh, not Torah Shebichsav. So a woman can learn Chumash, Nach, all of Shulchan Aruch, all the Mosar and Hashkafa Sparim. So what's missing? One thing, Gemara. That's all. Because the Rama, first of all, passes like that, that Malam Dovita Torah is Torah Shebal Peh. Torah Shebichsav, there's no problem. She's not chayit, but she learns. She gets mitzvah schar like a ena mitzvah v'yos. But it's not kilu malam de tiflus. That's what the Rambam says. So now, why? What's so special about Gemara? First of all, you should know Gemara is not halacha. Halacha is, what are the facts? That's the final decision after a discussion in a Gemara that could go on for 10 pages. And those 10 pages, most is what is not true. Right, give me an example. I'll make up a Gemara. Okay, just for to make it easier. There's a Mishnah, let's say, that says it's a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur. That's the Mishnah. The Gemara questions that and says, we have another source that says it's prohibited to fast on Yom Kippur. We have a contradiction. Here it says it's prohibited to fast on Yom Kippur. Here it says that it's a mitzvah. Gemara offers an answer. Maybe it's a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur when it falls during the week. And it's also to fast on Yom Kippur when it falls on Shabbos. Gemara says, no, that can't be, because we have another source that says that when Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, you fast. Gemara says, okay, so maybe that when it says it's a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur is when you're healthy. And when you're not healthy, when it's a life-threatening situation, then it's also a fast on Yom Kippur. Finished, okay. Okay, so up until that last line, everything was not true. The Gemara attempted to say that maybe when Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos, you don't fast. The Gemara said, that's not true. So up until that last line, you could have been learning for an hour or something that wasn't true. Okay, now what's the purpose of doing that? Why didn't Gemara just get to the point and say, halacha? Right? Because Gemara is an exercise in knowing how God thinks. The back and the forth, the analysis of the facts, the contradictions, the answers, are all to get into the habit of thinking the way the Rebbe Mishlam thinks, in order that every situation that you come to, you can analyze it and understand how God would look at it. In addition, you have to come to the truth. I have to know that when the Gemara said that the mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur is both during the week and on Shabbos, and only not when you are deathly ill, how do I know that's the only answer, that's the truth? Because I was able to eliminate every other answer. In order to know what the real answer is, I have to know how to eliminate all the other possible answers why they can't be true. So to know the truth, to see the light, you have to know how to dispel the darkness. So you have to be able to deal with all the other possibilities and know why they're not true, and then you know why this one is true. But if you don't know that, you know this one is true, but you don't know it's the only truth. You don't know why it has to be like that. In addition, in order to learn Gemara, you have to become familiar, therefore, with the negatives and the positives, a lot of things. You have to get into the minds of criminals to know how they think in order to be able to analyze what the Torah said. I'll give you a real example. The Gemara says that if somebody, Reuven, claims that Shimon owes him $100, and Shimon denies it, I don't owe you a penny, you're lying, or I paid you. Shimon doesn't have to swear, he doesn't have to pay, and Reuven has to prove that he owes him the money. If he can't prove it, tough luck. What happens, though, if Reuven says, you owe me $100, and Shimon says, no, you're wrong. I owe you $50. And 50 either I paid, or I never owed you. Now, the Torah says that Shimon has to take a shvua. He has to swear that he doesn't owe the other $50. He has to pay the 50 that he admits, and he has to swear that he doesn't owe the other 50. Seems weird. If he says, I don't owe you anything, he gets off scot-free. He says, I owe you 50, then we make him swear. So what's the reasoning? So Gemara says, more or less, the following. That if the guy says, I don't owe you anything, says two possibilities. Tell him the truth, or he's a liar. If he's a liar, then he's probably going to swear falsely too. So there's no purpose of making him take an oath. Right? If he's a liar, he's a gunner. But if the guy admits to half and denies half, then maybe he's not really a liar and a gunner. He doesn't want to get away with this. That's why he feels guilty and he wants to admit to half. He's just trying to push it off. I don't have the money right now. I'll pay him some other time. And he's pushing it off. And making him take an oath will make him admit to the truth. Because he's not going to take a false oath. So we have to get into the minds of criminals to see how they function. Another Gemara. The Gemara says that we suspect a woman of committing adultery. And the man that we suspect her of committing adultery with saves her husband's life from a snake. So it would seem to imply that he's not an adulterer, because if he was an adulterer, he'd love to see this guy die so he could marry her. And he says, no, it's no proof. Because mayim genuvim yumtiku. The guy would rather live with her be'isher than have her mutter, because that's more exciting. So again, you have to get into the mind of a criminal, the mind of an immoral person. That's learning Gemara. The Gemara says, kol shenichnas bo das nichnas bo animus. The more that this kind of learning goes into a person's mind, the slyer he becomes. Now that can be positive, it can be very negative. In addition, Gemara is very natlamaisa. It's again, to learn principles of thought, logic, Torah logic, to be able to analyze other situations the way that God would analyze them. Give an example of this. This is a real Gemara. It's Gemara in Pesachim. Gemara says that somebody searched his house for chametz, and now his house is chametz free. Okay, he's sitting on the porch, and he sees a mouse run into the house with a piece of chametz. Now he knows his house has chametz in it. He has to go search again. But before he had a chance to go search again, he saw the mouse, a mouse run out with chametz in his mouth. Gemara says, can you assume that it's the same mouse, the same chametz, or maybe not? Since, what's it called, maybe it's a different mouse, maybe it's a different chametz. Right? Maybe this mouse brought another piece of chametz out, and it was, that chametz is still there. So you have to still search. Gemara says, if you can assume that it's the same mouse and the same chametz, what if a white mouse went in with chametz and a black mouse came out with chametz? Now it's a different mouse. Can we still assume it's the same chametz? Because there's no reason to assume there was more than chametz there, because there's only one piece. You search the house, and there's only one piece that went in. So probably the mice stole the chametz, one from the other. Or maybe not. And Gemara says, if you still can assume it's the same, what happens if a cat goes in, a mouse goes in with a piece of chametz, and a cat comes out with a piece of chametz? Would now, if it's the same chametz, he probably would have the mouse in his mouth too. Right? Or maybe not. And what happens, Gemara says, if a mouse went in, and a cat came out with a mouse and a piece of chametz to the cat in the mouse's mouth. Now you can assume for sure it's the same chametz, or maybe not. It's a real Gemara. Now, men can sit and learn this Gemara without exaggeration for weeks. There is so much here, it seems ridiculous. As a rabbi, if anybody would ever call me on Erev Pesach and say, I just made bedikas chametz and a white mouse, black mouse, or whatever, I'd faint. I never got a question like this, and I don't ever think I'm going to get one. But what's the idea? The idea is so many principles of law are represented by these cases, and so many different opinions, and so many questions, and so many. You could write a book just on what I just told you now. Tell me, without exaggeration. Because it's not the case itself, it's not the lama, it's not halacha. It's a realm of analysis of information and knowing how to deal with it and what the ramifications of that information are, whatever. And therefore, learning this is a very dangerous thing. Because you have to get into the minds of criminals, like we say, you have to learn a lot of things that aren't true before you get to the truth. You fill up your mind with a lot of things that aren't true. And a lot of things that are totally not lamaisa. It's a dangerous thing. But somebody has to learn it. So God gave men the responsibility to do that. So they can't say, well, it's dangerous, I'm not going to do my mitzvah. You have a mitzvah. And because you have a mitzvah, the mitzvah protects you and helps you to do it properly. A woman has a different role. Her role is not to ascertain this information and then analyze it. Her role is to take it after the information is already ascertained, how to apply it. So she doesn't have a mitzvah to learn this. If she doesn't have a mitzvah, then the risk is a risk and there's no benefit. A very small benefit. Right? She doesn't have to do it. There's another group of Klal Yisrael that has a role to do that. So she doesn't have to do it. She does it voluntarily. She's taking a risk that she doesn't have to take. And she doesn't have a mitzvah to do it, so it doesn't protect her. So if a person indiscriminately teaches his daughter this kind of Torah, he's running the risk of teaching her to be immoral. And even though there's the same risk by a man, but a man has to do it. He has to take the risk. And also he has a mitzvah to protect him. The woman doesn't have to take the risk, and she has no mitzvah to protect her. And therefore, some learn that it's only if you teach your daughter indiscriminately, or you teach students indiscriminately. But a woman on her own who says, I can handle it, right, can learn Gemara, as long as she doesn't make it the main thing of her learning, because that's not her role.
What about learning sources from the Gemara?
Yeah, because of that, Nestama, there's no issue. No Beis Yaakov principal or teacher never looked into a Gemara to look up a source. Right, but what it means is to sit and learn Gemara in a classroom setting, as a father teaching his daughters, as if he would teach his sons. That's what's prohibited.
Why does it use the word immoral?
Because tiflus means something that is, it means immorality, but doesn't it means something that is what's the word? No, it's tiflus means tafel. Tafel as bland. It means frivolous, that's the word, frivolous. Because it could be immoral. And it could be just frivolous. She's going to learn the wrong things from here. It's a risky thing to learn this. And if you have to do it, you have to do it. If you don't have to do it, and you don't have a mitzvah to do it, then you run a risk for no purpose, and you don't have a mitzvah to protect you. Okay. So you get the basic idea of why that part of learning specifically is not, again, it's basically usher indiscriminately to do it. Yeah.
And what about a group of women who individually decide they would like to go to a place like Gomorrah's talk because they think they can cope with it? Is that
anything? Not sure. I'm grappling with that. Some place like that asked me for Haskama on their place. And I'm not sure if I'm going to give it or not. If these women would not have gone somewhere else. And here at least they're in a decent environment. So they're learning Gemara, and they're women who on their own are being guided by people who know how to guide them properly. So is that us or not? I'm not sure. Not sure. What they learn in the high schools, you know, the modern high schools that teach Gemara is not really Gemara. By the boys, it's not. It's a Yetzer Hara completely. I'll prove it to you. Those same modern high schools always have questions about teaching boys Gemara because it's irrelevant. Right? But for girls, it's relevant. It doesn't make sense, right? The dad's going to teach girls and not boys. That's the Yetzer Hara. In any case, okay, let's go on to the next thing. And that is the brach of Shalo Asani Isha and Shosani Kirtzona. Based on everything we said now, we'll have a good explanation, but it's not something you can say over in on Aregalachas. You need a lot of hakdamos, but once you understand it, you can adapt it. Okay. First, we're going to give quite a few prefaces, and then we'll put them all together. Firstly, why can't a man make a bracha, shosani ish? Why does that be negative? Shalo asani ish. Make a bracha, shosani ish. Happy I'm a man. Says the Bach, no, can't make such a bracha. Why? Because the Gemara says that it would be better for people not to be created, to be left in Olam Haba, and get their Olam Haba for free, even though it would be unearned and really not appreciated 100%, but better to have an unearned Olam Haba than to take the risk of losing it completely. And that's what you do when you come to this world. So therefore, a person can't make a bracha. Thank you, God, for making me in this world a man, because I would have been rather a neshama and not been in this world at all. So the most he can say is, now that you put me in the world, right, I'm happy that you didn't make me a woman, meaning deprive me of those mitzvahs that a man has more than a woman. Basically, it's all going to boil down to that idea. We're not talking about men and women in any respect except the mitzvahs. A man is making a bracha that he has extra mitzvahs that a woman doesn't have. But he can't make it in a positive way, because I would rather not be in this world with mitzvahs altogether. I'd rather have gotten my Olam Haba, you know, the bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Right? Have one for sure instead of taking a risk. Maybe I'll get two. Maybe I won't have anything. So that's what Hillel and Shammai both agreed after a year and a half of arguing, that it was better, really, that a person should not be created from our standpoint. God knows that ultimately it's better for us to have been created. That's why he created us. And we'll gain more. But from our logical standpoint, we would rather have been neshamas in Olam Haba and just remained there. Finished. Got our Olam Haba, undeserved, unearned, for sure, finished, don't take any risks. So that's one thing. Second thing, the Gemara says, G'dola haftacha shenemra le'isha yosem liba'ish. A woman has a greater guarantee for Olam Haba than a man does. And not that she has a greater Olam Haba, but she has a greater guarantee that she won't lose her Olam Haba. More of a guarantee than a man has. Why? So I'll tell you what I think, and I think it's very simple and it's true. The Gemara says, why do women have that haftacha? Because they caused their husband and children to learn Torah. So what? Because they caused their husband and children to learn Torah, they have a better guarantee than the people actually learn? What does it mean? If causing them to learn Torah is so great, then learning is even greater. I'll tell you simply what I think it is, and it's, again, I'm sure this is the pshat. There's a Mishnah that says, Kol hamazakeh haradim ein chet bo al yada. Somebody who makes other people do mitzvahs, the Rabbanu Shel Olam protects him from aveiros. And kol hamachdi es harabim, right? Ein mashpikim biyado lasas tshuva. And a person who makes other people do chatoyim, the Rebbe Shem doesn't help him do tshuva. And the Gemara says, what's the reason? Very logical. If I cause you to do mitzvahs, and I end up doing averus, I'm going to end up in Gehenim, and you, who I caused you to be mitzvah, you're going to be in Gan Eden. That's very not fair. The person who caused that person to be in Gan Eden is being Gehenim. So the Rebbe Shem protects me. Doesn't make it impossible. If I really want to sin, I can sin. Then it's tough luck. But he protects me that that unfair situation shouldn't come about. On the other hand, if I cause you to sin and cause you to go to Gehenna, and I do tshuva and I go to Gan Eden, that's also not fair. It's a very unfair situation. So the Rebbe will not help me do tshuva. If I want to, I can. But I won't get the siyata d'shmaya that people normally get. That's the case. Since a woman's role is a supportive role, she causes her husband and children to learn Torah. If she wouldn't have a guarantee on her Olam Haba, if the Bansha wouldn't give her a special protection, then it could come out that very unfair situation where she'll be in Gehenna and her children and husband will be in Gan Eden. So the Rebbeinu Shalom, as with everything, so Mizakas HaRadim, the Rebbeinu Shalom protects them. Same thing over here. Okay, next. Tulsa says, that halacha, that better that a person shouldn't have been created, because a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Don't take the risk. Only applies to Beinonim and Rishoyim. But a tzaddik, for sure, better he should be in this world and get a bigger Olam Haba than he would have gotten had he not earned it. So it doesn't apply to tzaddik. It only applies to Beinonim and Rishoyim, ultimately, after the fact. Okay. One more thing. We know, Gavul HaMitzuva V'yosa Mimi She'ena Mitzuva V'yosa. A person who's commanded and does a mitzvah is greater than the person who's not commanded and volunteers to do it. Doing a mandatory mitzvah is greater than doing a voluntary mitzvah. Yeah. Gadol ha-mitzvah v'yoseh, mimi she'eino mitzvah v'yoseh. Greater is the person who does a mitzvah he has to do, greater than the person who doesn't have to do that mitzvah and does it anyway. A man who goes on Rosh Hashanah and listens to shofar gets more reward or it's bigger mitzvah than the woman who goes who doesn't have to go to shofar. She could have slept late and nobody would have any complaints on her after 120 years. And if the man slept late and didn't hear shofar, he's going to be punished for not listening to shofar. He has a chiyuv. Now, Tulsus explains, what's the idea behind it? Why is it like that? Because when you have to do something, there's a yetzer hara, there's a resistance. When you don't have to do it, there's no resistance, or very little resistance. When you choose to do it on your own, there's no resistance. Biggest proof to that is you can go sometimes without eating breakfast, lunch, if you're busy and you're excited about something, and let it be a fast day, right? Before you get up, you're already hungry. Why? Because a fast day, you're not allowed to eat. When you're not allowed to do it, it bothers you. When you could, you're just choosing not to, then not a big deal. Right? Little kids always are fighting, let me fast on Yom Kippur, let me fast on Tisha B'Av. As soon as they become Bar Bas Mitzvah, oh, I can't fast, and it's too hard, or whatever. What happened? Last year, you didn't have to do it, and you wanted to. Now you have to do it you don't want. That's human nature. So that's a cloud. But this Gemara that I'm going to tell you now seems to contradict that. The Gemara says, Gedola Tshuva. Tshuva is so great that it's even greater than Korbanos. And not only is it greater than Korbanos you have to bring, it's even greater than Korbanos that you volunteer to bring. What does that Gemara seem to imply? That a Korban that you volunteer to bring is greater than a korban you have to bring. See, opposite of what we just said. Here, a mitzvah that's voluntary is greater than a mitzvah that's mandatory. The answer, I think, is the following. When it said, Gavul ha-mitzvah v'yosa, mimi she'eino mitzvah v'yosa, it doesn't mean the mitzvah is greater. It means the person's greater. A person who does something he has to do, right, is greater. The effect on that person is greater than the person who does it voluntarily. It's not saying anything about the mitzvah itself. A mitzvah that you volunteer may be a bigger mitzvah, but the effect it has on the person who does it is greater because he had to go against the resistance. When I was in high school, they had what was called an isometric exercise. That was the physical education. Right? It was a new thing. They had new math and everything new, and I didn't learn anything because of all these new things that my teacher didn't understand. But in any case, what was the theory? The theory was that when you go against the resistance, it's much greater exercise than when you just do it on your own. So you used to push against walls, push against another person, or whatever, a boxer. The best training is to box with somebody else, to have a resistance. So when you go against the resistance, it strengthens you more. So the person is greater, Gadol HaMitzvah Biyosa, not Gadol Mitzvah SheMitzvah. Gadol HaMitzvah, the person, is greater for going against the resistance. But the mitzvah may be greater if it's voluntary. Two separate things. So tshuva, karbanos, a voluntary carbon may be a greater carbon. But the person who brings the one he has to bring is a greater person because it has an effect on him. So doing a mitzvah voluntarily may be a greater reward for the mitzvah, but there's a greater benefit influence and from the person who does it himself. Okay. Now let's put everything together. Women, we said, let's see, men. Men have a mitzvah to go out there in the Torah world and conquer the world Torah-wise, meaning to take all the information, good, bad, indifferent, things that are immoral, things that are what's it called, ganovim or whatever, and analyze all that information. And because of that, he has to come in contact with a lot of negative things. So in order to fulfill his role, right, and the physical world also, man's supposed to go out and conquer the world and be involved out there in the public arena, and he comes in contact with a lot of negative things. So in order to fulfill his role, he needs to be strengthened against the Yetzer Hara. How do you become strengthened against the Yetzer Hara? By going up against it, resisting it, resistance. So he needs mitzvahs that cause resistance. Those are mitzvahs you have to do, and more so mitzvahs you have to do at a certain time. That's the biggest resistance. Having to get up at a certain time and not saying, well, I can do it later. You have to do it now, right? That's the biggest resistance. So a man was given many mitzvahs that he has to do now, at a certain time frame, in order to give him the opportunity to go against that resistance and to strengthen himself. He's given a sparring partner. So now he's able to fulfill his role better. He needs those mitzvahs that are mandatory and have a set time. A woman, on the other hand, her role is to be more intuitive. Not to fight all those Yetzer Haras or whatever and all that knowledge that's negative. She gets it after it's already refined. We know what the halacha is. We know what the hashgacha is. She has to apply it. She has to be more sensitive to God's will than to his command. She has to know how to take those things and go beyond the command. How do I create an environment? And that's all intuition. That's all being sensitive to God's will, not necessarily his command. Therefore, a man says like this, Rabbanu Shalom, since I don't have any great guarantee that I'm not going to lose my Olam Haba, I would have rather remained in the Shama in the other world and gotten my Olam Haba without a risk than taking a risk. So I can't say I'm happy you made me a man. But at least if you made me already in this world, you didn't deprive me of the mitzvahs that a woman doesn't have, because I need those mitzvahs to fulfill my role. That's what he says, Shavua Sami Isha. I can't say I'm happy to be here because I would have rather remained in the Shama. But now that I'm here, I'm happy that you gave me those mitzvahs that a woman doesn't have, because I need those mitzvahs specifically to strengthen me and to make sure that I'll get my Olam Haba. I need those mitzvahs that create a resistance. A woman, because she has a guarantee, a greater guarantee, that she won't lose her Olam Haba, she is like a tzaddik. For her, it's better to be in this world. She can say it positively. She doesn't have to say negatively. So she says, she could say, thank you, God, for making me a woman. But that would imply, I'm happy I don't have those mitzvahs that a man has. That's not nice. So she says it in a way that explains why she's happy. Shasani kirtsono. You made me in a way that, sure, you deprived me of certain mitzvahs, but you gave me the ability to do some of those mitzvahs voluntarily, and to make me more sensitive to your will, not to your command. Because I need that to fulfill my role. My role is one of being more intuitive, more subjective, more understanding of what the implications of the halacha and the mitzvahs are. Not the command, but the ratzon. So I'm happy that you made me the way you did. I can't say I'm happy you didn't give me those mitzvahs. But l'maisa, you made me in a way that because I don't have those mitzvahs as a chiyuv, I'm more sensitive to your will, which helps me fulfill my role. So each one basically says what represents the kinds of mitzvahs that they need to fulfill their role. The reason they say it the way they say it, right? So then, so I always get the question, then just say it the way, why have to be so roundabout that you need 20 minutes of explanation to explain what it is? Say it, because it means other things too. There are many other explanations. It's just one. Right? And in order to be able to have all the explanations, it has to be said in such a way that it could be understood in many ways. If we just say what I said now openly, then it would only mean one thing. And Torah means many, many things. So the Rabbanan set up a way that it means there's other ideas I could tell you. But this is one of them. As one of them, it fits into the words perfectly, but other things can fit into those same words too. So that gives you a little bit of an understanding of the roles of men and women when it comes to Torah and some of the difficult things that people ask, and you have at least some understanding of how to adapt it to people that you may come in contact with. Yes?
I don't understand the explanation of why a man would say Shalom Sam Yisha. If he's saying, if I'm already created in this world,
right,
thank you for not making me a woman.
Meaning, not making me a woman physically.
Thank you for giving me the
tool. Now that you made me as a man, at least you didn't deprive me of the mitzvahs that a woman doesn't have. That's what he's saying. Shalom Sam Yisha doesn't mean you didn't make me physically a woman. It means you did not deprive me of those mitzvahs that are represented by a woman's mitzvah of responsibility.
But if he was created a woman, he wouldn't need the right.
That's what I'm saying. But it's not physical. In other words, I'm not saying, thank God you didn't make me a physical woman. Now that you made me a man, that's a given. But you didn't make me a man who's deprived of those mitzvahs that a woman's. That's what it means.
Okay.